What I'm going to talk about this whole session is something like I've never seen in my entire life as a Christian. And I became a Christian, gave my life to the Lord after college, accepted that free gift of salvation, and I've been serving Him ever since. He very early on put this, because I love science, I'm a research leader, scientist with Dow Chemical, developed a lot of new products for the company. I like to tell people I know very, very well what science can do and can figure out, but I also know what it can't. And there's a lot of people that don't understand that. And so I've been teaching about the evidence for creation for almost 30 years now. But I've never seen in all of those 30 years anything like the impact it has had in the nation of Fiji with the young children. Now, I'm going to give you some background before I start the slides. And there's two little 5 to 10 minute presentations. One of them is from the trip we did in 2017. And I talked about that at the Grace Conference last year. But what happened in the second trip a year later in 2018 exceeded anything I've ever could have hoped for or imagined. I never would have believed some of the response to us being in their school system. Now, as part of background, what I'm about to share dovetails with Pastor Stringer's talk this morning just incredibly. He talks about the damage of bringing the education of our children underneath the umbrella of the state or the world or the way the world thinks. Now, like it or not, 95% of all the children in our nation are going to go through a public education system. Like it or not, statistically, kids growing up in a Christian church, probably a great number of them born again, destined for heaven, by the time they come out of college, and I've heard statistics all the way from 60% to 90%, it's somewhere in that range, say they want nothing to do with God. They want nothing to do with going to church. They are done with anything dealing with faith, the Christian faith. In the 75 or so percent range, it is being trained out of their thinking. So the enemy of God over the last 100 years has used the education system of our country to at best make God irrelevant in the minds of children who then become adults, who then become teachers and leaders, because he's left out of the curriculum. It's not in the curriculum. It's not in history. It's not in science. It's not in biology. It's not in cosmology. It's not in ethics. We've got to figure out what's good, okay? It is left out at best. At worst, it is directly contradicted. Now, what's coming at them, this is all background, okay, is a fire hose of information from that direction. God is left out. Come on in. You can leave the door cracked so people know they can come in. And they're getting it. They're getting it from the movies. They're getting it from the museums. They're getting it from the National Geographic, Time Magazine. You know, all of this stuff. They're getting it from the media. They're getting it from the National Public Radio, NPR. They're getting it from their textbooks. They're getting it from their teachers. They're getting it every direction.
National parks.
Amusement parks, Disney, okay? All leaving God out, giving it lip service, but trying to explain things as if it all can all explain without God. You know this is true, okay? Meanwhile, the church is like a squirt gun of information, by and large, that even addresses the issue, okay? So it is not rocket science what's going on around us. Now, what I'm about to share is, and by the way, Dr. Baugh, please stand up. This is Dr. Baugh has been going to Fiji how many times? 44 times. 44 times over about a 40-year period. Started an original Baptist, strong, fundamental Bible teaching wing over there that has turned into dozens of churches, thousands of people reached. And a little over 2 years ago, he invited me to come over and help teach creation at a creation conference and in the churches over there. And I've done that a dozen times in a dozen nations around the world. And it feels good. I mean, you get into churches, you teach to a lot of churches, you get into a lot of Christian schools. and so on, and you teach. But what this has led to was getting into every public school in an entire nation to teach about creation. You're going to see the impact as we move along. Now, before I get to the first little video, which summarizes the trip 2 years ago, I want you to explain, I want you to understand what went on in what the history of Fiji, because to see the flow of things and why they happen, you got to understand the history of things. Fiji, 150 years ago, before the 1850s, was considered the evilest, the most decadent, darkest, horrendously evil place on this entire planet. I mean, think of a nation totally controlled by ISIS and slave trade, you know, the sexual slave tradery. Think of Nineveh, where they would come in. Why did Jonah not want to go to Nineveh? This was the evilest nation in the world. Just would kill pregnant women, enslave people, do the worst things you could imagine. This nation took cannibalism to an absolute extreme. They would literally raise children so they'd eat them. They had menus to do that. The leaders of the country at one point bragged he'd eaten over 900 human beings. That was a point of pride. No inkling of there being anything wrong with this. And the people were submissive. They just accepted it. A child was selected to be eaten, they would just figure it was their lot. And they would just passively, there I go. Okay, so we sent missionaries, England primarily, okay, because we're there to save the lost as Christians. Many of them gave their life to disease. A national hero to this day in the National Museum was a missionary who came, and I think to make an example of him, the cannibals ate him. But they ate everything. They ground his bones. They ate his hair. They boiled and ate his clothes. The only thing they couldn't eat were the soles of his shoes. They're in the museum today, the leather soles of this missionary shoes. That's the decadence of these people. What did that do? That motivated the Christians of the day. We're only talking a little over about 170 years ago to send more missionaries because these people are so lost. They are so totally deceived by Satan. Well, they got through to the leader of the nation, the king who had unified the Fiji Islands. What was his name? Okay, that was the name of the leader, okay? Thank you. I don't speak Fijian yet, and I don't pronounce names well, so thank you. And I think, I don't know his thought process, but I think at a real regenerative level, he realized the God who made the universe, the God who made the beauty, the God who made me, the God who made human beings in his very image as a human being came to earth. A human being was God and died in our place, and I am eating other human beings made in God's image. How can I do that? And he totally changed. And the nation changed with him. Now, no nation ever becomes 100% Christian, but they wanted to change their very form of clothing. They went from running around essentially naked to wanting long flowing robes so they wouldn't be tempted by human flesh. And to this day, that's their traditional clothing 150 years later. So we had a conversion like at Nineveh, where a whole nation turned in the direction of accepting Christ as Savior. Now, thousands over the next 150 years of churches, and you know, churches, they don't have mega churches in third world countries. They have little churches you can walk to. So thousands of Christian churches. Well, the leadership wanted this to continue. Over the last 10 years, starting about 6 years ago, I believe, a Bible was given to every single student in the nation of Fiji. Now, that's rare. And it's the one book the vast majority of these students own. But meanwhile, everything coming at them in their education. And these are not dumb kids. They're all tuned into media. They've got cell phones. They're watching movies. It's all coming from everything made itself perspective. Their textbooks are coming from Australia, England, America. Their teachers are taught to think this way. The Bible is like a bunch of spiritual stuff, but then there's reality and science. And the leaders of the country, who are by and large have a Christian thinking influence because they grew up that way, they're watching the next generation have less and less interest in Christianity. So there's the atmosphere. Well, I proposed to the missionary when we were there the first time. I said, what do you think would happen if I could get like 20,000 of these devotionals? They're illustrated. They've got beautiful pictures. They talk about biology and parts of our body and animals and fish and how things are made on every page with a Bible verse at the bottom, tying what's in the textbooks back to the Bible. And they had their own copy of this book. And he went like through the roof with excitement. Now, most missionaries don't even get it. It's like, well, that's a side issue. We got to just stick to the Bible and the gospel. But he said, if we can tie the Bible back to everything else they're learning, it's going to have a big impact on their thinking. So we did that. We shipped 20,000 books over there. Dr. Baugh and I were over there, and we spoke, and you'll see this in this little five-minute video of what happened about a year ago. We spoke to, and it's on the video, I think it was 35 schools to about 13,000 students, and every one of those students got one of these books. So I'm going to roll this video just as the introductory, and this is what we would go in teaching. Then I'm going to spend about the next half hour, because we came back a year later. This time, we printed these full-color, hardcover, sewn and stitched, super durable devotionals. It's the third one in this series. This is the second one. This has a whole nother set of evidences. And I'll tell you some of the miracles that went along with it. We've currently shipped, when you include the initial 20,000, we've shipped 140,000 of these books between the two of them over to Fiji, enough to cover every single 9th through 12th grade student in the entire nation, and then some, and all the teachers and administrators. So I'm going to pass these around. And I'm going to give a little shortened version, because we would only have an hour, and actually we'd only have about 40 minutes to take everything they've learned about science, reality, history, and the past, and align it with what the Bible has to say, which they still have a reverence for, but they don't really understand, and it wasn't that relevant to most of them. So kind of like America in the 50s, think of Fiji that way. Not at all antagonistic to the Bible, very much of a Christian culture, but growing, not all that interested in it. Okay, that's the mindset in Fiji. So here's kind of a little video of that first missions trip. So here's the team. Here's the missionary we worked with right in the middle. This is the great-great-great-great-grandson of that original cannibal king. And here's what a typical assembly would look like. In a range, frequently, we had about 1,000 kids. Some of them really long hauls inside, some of them just outside. We would do a public school in the morning, a public school in the afternoon. Sometimes we'd break into two teams and do three or four a day. In total, we saw 15,000, not 13,000 students. This was a Hindu school run by Hindu. As long as they teach the national curriculum, they could bring whatever religion they wanted into their school system. But here's the first surprise. These are public schools. Day after day we show up, and these kids are singing hymns. Now, they don't comprehend them necessarily. They still think it's by good works you get to heaven. That's the whole mindset of the island. It's a Methodist works-based salvation. But they still have that reverence of Christian principles, and they'll see it in their schools. And the other thing, that nation has such a natural harmony. They just blend their voices together as they sing. You see the inspired evidences, books being lined up as we're getting ready to talk. In this school, they're just lined up top and bottom level, up and down. So we would spend, typically I'd take the first 20 minutes, Dr. Baugh would take the next 20 minutes, and we would just talk about science and the Bible. During this trip, we had Dr. Willie Dye. He's a biblical archaeologist. He would cover, you know, where did humans come from. That picture was at a teacher's college where one evening we had 2 hours to teach the teachers about creation. It's like 6 hours from one side of the island to the other between the two major cities. About 1 million people total, a couple hundred thousand children. probably 300,000 from elementary all the way on up through. I'm going to turn this down just so I can talk a little closer, easier. But as you look, they are so attentive, and they get the jokes, they get the concepts. This is one of the demonstrations I call the magic can of evolution, where they're all laughing at the end of it. They're just hanging on every word because they've never seen it connected. They've never heard the Bible connected back to the other stuff that they're hearing in school. And then they would line up to get copies of this book. They don't get to keep their textbooks. They're often sharing 2 and 3 students to a textbook. And to get a book is huge that they get to own. So we would pass those out, and then they'd line up to get them signed, and then we'd stay as long as we could before we'd be off to the next place.
I assume they're bilingual and speak English?
They are. All the schools are taught in English, which really makes it a lot easier. Their heart language is Fijian, which they will speak at home, but they all comprehend English quite well. You had to slow down, speak a little slower, not use a lot of technical long words, but they got it. And this just stunned me. You could feel the Spirit of the Lord in these rooms. All of you who have heard Carl speak, he's a master orator, and he would bring the gospel so relevant back to their language, talking about their ancestors that had accepted Christ, and really making the gift of salvation so clear. And by the thousands, 10,000 or more of these students, and as you look at their faces, they are so sincerely asking to accept what God has provided for them. And I'd never seen anything like it in my entire life. This little girl is in a school that specializes in orphans. They send orphans there, and she's Indian in origin. So there's a little Indian orphan accepting Christ in the middle of her peers. So I like to say, think about what would happen in America if every single school in the nation, every student, could see the credibility of the evidence for creation confirming what the Bible has to say, how evolution couldn't possibly scientifically be true, and having a clear presentation of what God had done for us and what he is, who he is. I think it would change our nation. And we're talking about an hour out of thousands of hours of teaching them the opposite. That's how powerful the truth is. The truth is that double-edged sword that cuts to bone and marrow, because you've got to deal with it when you put it in front of people. Trouble is, it's not being put in front of people. They're not getting to see this stuff, and then they become blind to it. Now, go ahead and hit those lights just so we can see the screen a little better. So, went back a year later. We brought with us, and you'll see the team at the very end, I'll show more of a slide presentation versus a video of what happened the second time and some of the absolute miracles that are going on as we went to this nation. But I want to just give you a flavor for what these students are hearing, because this doesn't have to be complex. You don't have to be this PhD scientist in order to explain the trustworthiness of God's word as it relates to reality, because there's this dichotomy, schizophrenia in our culture where we separate spiritual stuffs over here, and then there's physical, real stuff. And even the church does it. They don't touch it. They don't go there because they're afraid of criticism, and they're not experts in science, so they don't even touch it. But I like to tell the students, and I didn't even often have time to do this, but if I did, I would use it because it's very visual, that the Bible, it is the word of God, but it's not exhaustive in what it tells us. Where you can have an entire textbook talking about a single molecule in a single cell in a single animal, okay? Enormous amounts of information and knowledge learned. Well, the Bible doesn't have to go there. What it does, what God did, is give us a framework to put all of the information we see into the framework. And if we start without understanding the framework, we're going to misinterpret the information that's coming at us. And what God tells us is 10 times creatures reproduce after their own kind. Birds reproduce after their own kind. Fish reproduce after their own kind. Cattle reproduce after their own kind. 10 times he tells us that. See, that is biology. That's the foundation. And now go look at the world and see, is it true or not? And God's not afraid of us looking. We'll find out it is true. Nobody's ever seen anything different. Nobody's ever performed an experiment where they've seen the DNA code programmed to produce a bacteria produce something that's a half bacteria and half something else. It never happens. Just modified bacteria that they're made to do that so they can adapt. It says death is here because of our actions. What's the world tell us? 5 billion years on this planet, life's been around for about the last billion ballpark, slowly modifying one another with hundreds of millions of years of death and disease and bloodshed and extinction as one animal wipes out another and slowly eventually modifies to become people. That's nowhere in the Bible. It's not even remotely hinted at. It's the exact opposite of what the Bible says. And what that whole story implies is that God is the author of death. If all those rocks have been there for all that time and they're all filled with death and mankind hasn't even appeared, then God must have just made things that way. And he's the one who made cancers and diseases and bloodshed and extinctions. All that has nothing to do with our actions. What's the Bible tell us? God created a perfect, after 6 days of creation, all of creation, the entire universe was declared not just good, but very good. It's a weird definition of a billion years of death, disease, cancer, and bloodshed. It doesn't fit. And because we rebelled and he didn't want us to live forever separated from him, which is how we were meant to exist, had we chosen obedience, every cell would have produced a perfect copy, would have never physically died, but we would have been forever separated from him. Think of this God. He corrupted the entire universe so we wouldn't live forever and be forever separated from him. That's his mercy. That's his compassion for us. He would destroy creation for our benefit so we wouldn't be forever separated. See, that's the Christian understanding, the framework to understand why death exists. So what about all the rocks and fossils? And we'll get to that right at the end. We're told they're there because of millions of years of slow accumulation. Well, that's an interpretation. No scientist has a time machine. The Bible talks about a flood that covered this entire globe. And by the way, this was the thing that stunned everybody in Fiji. The principals, the teachers, the students, the administrators, one after another, school after school, when they started to understand those rock layers are there because of the flood and the evidence that supports it, the Bible came alive to them. All those ancient, huge time periods just disappeared when they realized, wow, the Bible was even right about that. They'd never thought about it. It had never been presented to them. And then all the cultures, including the people of Fiji, they spread out after this flood. The Chinese, the Incas, the Peruvians, the Egyptians, all these cultures they hear about after the flood, they arose. And then in the most momentous event in history, the one who made the entire universe entered into it as a human being. But why? To take the penalty of death we brought upon the creation upon himself. So that we'd have a way back into fellowship with God. Gospel message. But not just the last little piece of it, from beginning to end, the whole narrative. And when you present it that way, it starts to become real. But, now here's the other thing. These kids have not been programmed by generations and decades and a fire hose of information to reject it up front. So they're open to it much more than an American student, much more than an American teacher. And that's a big factor. And by the way, I'll come back to it, but what you're hearing is what happened in Fiji. But what God's put on my heart is this is a whole new way to do missions in third world developing countries. I don't think this is unique to Fiji. And I'll tell you why as we move along. So I would come in, I would usually, see that took almost 5 minutes. They don't have 5 minutes. So I would just kind of gloss over that. And I would just start with a whole group of 1,000 students that are there here, an American scientist who would come to their little school in their little nation and talk about science. And it's a big event. The whole school's there to listen. And I would explain to them how, if you just look at that first statement from the Bible, in the beginning, God made the heavens and the earth. That's a statement of science. And there really are only two possibilities to try to explain where did everything come from. And if you think of the whole universe as a box, one possibility is that the box made itself. And that's what they're hearing in their textbooks. The Big Bang. They've all heard the word Big Bang. They know that. And, you know, that time and space and matter and energy formed itself. And if I had time, I'd explain the first law of science says matter and energy can never make itself. You can't destroy it. You can't make it disappear. You can't just have something say, snap your fingers and it's gone. But you can't make it appear either. And every experiment ever done confirms this. And yet that's what this says. It just made itself. It contradicts what we know about science. And then I'd explain that, you know, in various ways, in various movies, in various things in their schooling, they're going to hear the word evolution. They're going to hear about mutations. These kids have watched the X-Men movies and all this stuff. They know about mutations. And the idea that little changes will transform one animal into another kind of animal. And it's presented as if it's a fact. And I said, that sounds complex. I mean, this is a quote from a college textbook. This well-preserved skeleton of a megastronodon allows an accurate reconstruction of our own earliest ancestor. Now, that sounds really smart and technical and lots of fancy words. I said, let me simplify it for you. What you're really being taught is that that's grandpa. Now, you're talking about 1,000 kids. They would roar in laughter, okay? I'd have to settle them down after they would just thought about that and saw that picture. And I'd go on and I'd explain. That's because they've eliminated the second possibility for where did the box come from? Where did the things in the box come from? Where did life come from? Where did people come from? The second possibility is that the box has a box maker. There's a creator. Now that's logical. It's not anti-science. It's actually very, very logical. And there's lots of evidence for this. Now, in my 10 to 25 minutes, depending on how much I had two goals. One, to help them understand the Bible gives us a model for everything comes from. It means what it says. Two, that everything couldn't have made itself because they've heard it has. And three, that life is way too complex to have made itself. And I would do it with some really visual demonstrations. I would show them this picture. Sometimes we'd be outside and you couldn't even use slides. You just had to paint word pictures. And I'd say, even the simplest cell in your body, even the simplest little bacteria that you've heard about is incredibly complex with thousands of parts. And none of these parts, you can find them just floating around in the ocean, or you can find them on a beach, or you can find them in a glass of water. The very chemicals that the cells that make up your body are made out of don't exist unless they're made by life. And I would give them an example. I'd say the most common piece that your body's made out of is called a protein molecule. And there are thousands, actually hundreds of thousands of different arrangements of the parts that make up this molecule. And I'd say I'm going to show you a huge, like, blown up model of what this molecule might look like. I'd say this represents a protein molecule. Like, our hair is a certain kind of protein. It's an arrangement of a bunch of little parts of something called amino acids, and each of these beads might be one of the 20 different colored amino acids, or 20 different kinds. Each one's represented by a different color. But they have to be in exactly the right spot. There's got to be a pink one, followed by three clear ones, followed by a blue one, followed by another pink one, followed by a green one, so that it will bend and twist and fold in just the way to make a hair molecule. Or it might be a skin protein, or it might be a hemoglobin that carried oxygen in your blood. So let me show you what one of these proteins might look like. So you got 1,000 kids watching this, and I'm running back and forth across the stage, running up and down the aisle, and the protein is coming out, and it's coming out, and it's coming out. And I would point out again, every single color, every single amino acid has to be in exactly the right spot. So if you had a big bowl with 20 different colored beads and you blindfolded, and that's all evolution has is just blind chance, you got to reach in and you got to find exactly the right color of those 20 and put it there. And then the next one has to end up in exactly the right spot. It could never happen. It is a scientific impossibility. And this is just one of the proteins. Our human body has about 100,000 completely different proteins, and the arrangements have to be just right. You see, God has done things this way so we would know it couldn't have done itself. But even if you have all the parts, could life form, or could more complex parts come together to form life? Well, I show them what I call the magic can of evolution. So I dump everything out of my can, and I show them there was a pin in the can. And the pin is like a little machine. Our body is like a very complex machine with lots more parts. So I say, wonder how many parts are in this pin. It's got a little spring that makes it click, but we'll just pull it all apart. It has a tip, which we'll put in the can. And then it has, unscrew the top. It has a clip at the top. Put that in the can and a little thing that makes it go click, click, click. It's got an ink cartridge. It has a spring, so it clicks back. And then it's got a tube to hold it all together. So there's six parts for the pin. Now, I have all the parts. You'll notice those parts were specifically designed to form a functioning machine. You can't just go to the beach somewhere and find the pin parts. They were designed. That's like the molecules of our body. You can't just go somewhere and find those on Mars. They're never found. Even if you find like amino acids, which are like the beads, they're this useless mixture of the wrong kind of amino acids. They're not even the right kind that make the right molecule. So I have all the parts. Those who want to believe life made itself, leave God out of their thinking. They've got the wrong framework. They've started without acknowledging what God has told us. They've got to come up with some other explanation. They'll say, well, you just have to add energy. In their biology textbooks, I'll say, there's an experiment where in 1952, a man named Stanley Miller, he had an explosion, and he created a few of the different colored beads, a few of the amino acids. Never created all of them, created the wrong kinds, but then the book will go on to say, well, this is how life formed. Well, even if you have the parts, could I have an explosion? Can I shake it? Can I spin it? How about time? How about if I shake the can for a million years? Am I going to get a working pin? They're laughing. See, they know it couldn't be true. So I say, well, science is really cool because you can do experiments. So I'm going to add explosive energy to the magic can of evolution. If you're going to do science, you have to do experiments and then see what the results are. So you might want to hold your ears. We're going to do this. So don't know if didn't that one was lost the carry these around and they lose their oomph. We'll add another one. There we go. So we added lots of energy to the magic can of evolution. And then if you do an experiment, you got to look and see what you're going to get. Oh, man, I hate it when that happens, but there's the pin. And again, the roar that goes up in these schools, these kids never forget that. And then you have to tell them, well, there were two pins in the can, or else they think some magic really happened. But they know it's absurd. And I tell them, you know, you just laughed at something that you knew was ridiculous because the idea of seven parts coming together, you understand it could never happen. And yet you are being told in your education system and the media and the movies that something a trillion times more ridiculous, the far more complex parts of life, could come together and more of them be added to it and they become more and more complex creatures. And it couldn't be true. See, this isn't rocket science. These kids get it. And all of a sudden, the Bible starts to become more and more and more relevant to them and real to them instead of it just being a book of religion. Now, at some point, we would always, can someone bring me one of the Pearls in Paradise books that ended up someplace in the back? We would take time just to get them excited. And I would say, I want to just read one of the pages out of the books. This happens to be November 2nd. Okay. Cause, I want you to understand some of these things that are going on. So we would say, anybody born on November 2nd, every day of the year, there's a different cool story about something God has done. And in a group of 1,000 kids, someone would always raise his hand. And I'd say, this page talks about the brain of a bee. Your new nickname is Bee Brain. And all the kids would laugh, okay? And then we'd read the page, or sometimes I'd paraphrase it. But I'd say, it says, a bee has a brain so small, you need a magnifying glass to see it. Its brain is a fraction the size of a human being, and yet it allows it to fly and navigate and pass information to other bees. But researchers at Princeton University decided one day, let's see just how smart these little bees are. So they took the food source for the bees and they moved it 150 foot away from the hive. And then they started their stopwatches to see how long would it take the bees to find the food. Well, it took them 1 minute to find that food 150 feet away. Next, they moved the food another 150 feet in the same direction. Again, they found it in less than a minute. They did this two more times, moving the food 450 feet away, 600 feet away. Then the astounding happened. While the researchers were studying the bees were studying the researchers. When they moved the food a fifth time to 750 feet away, the bees were already there waiting for the food to arrive. The bees saw the pattern, calculated the next move, anticipated the action of the researchers, and beat them to the new location. You are being taught that all this intelligence just happened by accident over millions of years. The ability of bees to learn quickly shows the hand of the Creator. It isn't accident and chance. And then the Bible verses Jeremiah 10:6, for as much as there is none like unto thee, O Lord, thou art great, and thy name is great in might. So every day, day after day, they're being reinforced who God really is. And they loved it. They couldn't wait to get this book. And there's a picture of a bee. Now I got to do this one too. Normally we'd only have time to do one, but we picked several dealing with the fish and the tropics and stuff just to deal with these kids. And I'll just paraphrase this one. I said, this is a little fish called the upu fish. And it turns out this fish is only found. There's nowhere in the whole world, in all the oceans of the world, you find this specific fish except off the Big Island of Hawaii, in the state of Hawaii, out in the South Pacific. Turns out this fish lives in salty ocean water, but it has to lay its eggs in fresh water. Like salmon here in the United States, we know they swim upstream to lay their eggs in fresh water. If they lay their eggs in the salty water, they'll just die. It would go extinct, end of the upu fish. Well, it turns out where this fish lives in the ocean water, the only source of fresh water is upstream of this waterfall. It has to lay its fish, not at the bottom of the waterfall, because that water just gets flushed out into the ocean, upstream of the waterfall. We got a problem. How does a fish get to the top of the waterfall that lives in the ocean? Well, of all the creatures in the entire universe, this fish is the only one. And I would ask the students, and some would say, well, like a flying fish? I said, no, they don't fly. They just glide. It can't fly. This is 440 feet up this waterfall, sheer cliff down. And someone would say, well, maybe it's swim. And I'd say, well, would you like to try to swim up that waterfall? It ain't going to work. This little fish is designed so it can take its front fins and forms a suction cup. And then it takes its back fins, sucks itself to the wet rock, and shoves forward. Sticks itself, shoves forward. Sticks itself, shoves forward. And in a matter of a day, it will climb the 400 feet from the bottom of the waterfall to the top of the waterfall, swim into the fresh water, lay its eggs, they get fertilized, it gets flushed back down, the little fingerling fish, they grow to the point where they're, young adults, And then they get flushed down into the ocean and go through their life cycle again until they want to lay eggs. Then they climb back up the waterfall. Now, did that happen one small change at a time over millions of years?
No way.
No way. They would die long before. It couldn't. It all had to be in place at once. So we would know there's a creator that makes everything that's needed created to function for a purpose. You know, God expects us, our jaws to drop in awe like little children seeing a butterfly for the first time, and give him the glory. And instead, we pretend it all made itself and then teach generation after generation that this is true when it couldn't possibly be true. These things aren't answered by evolution. They're just ignored. So that's where I would usually end. The second speaker, you've got to put all this in the context of world history. What is the true history of this planet? If that's, and by the way, they kind of inherently know there's a creator. They kind of inherently know God must be behind things. But how do you fit it into a real viewpoint of what has happened on this planet? You got to explain, well, what about all the millions of years? What about all the rock layers? What about the fossils? What about the, you know, the huge layers of sediment? What about the deep river valleys? They've seen pictures of all this stuff. So in real quick, simple terms, I would say when a researcher digs up a fossil is just an animal that used to live in the past, never comes with a label attached, never comes with a video, never comes with an instruction manual. Nobody ever pulls a fossil out of the ground and holds it up to its ear and listens really close and hears it say, 100 billion years ago. And when you get a microphone, it's just great because it reverberates all over the other. I was crawling on the bottom of the ocean and I can have a dialogue. Were you really? Yeah, I was. What happened next? A rock hit me on the head. Did it hurt? Yeah, and then I died. You know, and they're laughing. You know, I say, it doesn't talk. It can't tell you anything. It has to be interpreted. And if you're trained to think in a way that there's never been a flood that covered this globe, and by the way, there's enough water in the oceans that if you were just to push up on the ocean bottoms and lots of lava was coming out, it would cover the entire earth with 6,000 feet of water. That's how much water is in the ocean. And there are seashells on top of Mount Everest. Did a seashell one day say, hey, to his friend, I think I'm going to climb Mount Everest today. And the clam climbed up the mountain? They're laughing. No. Those seashells were buried underwater. The rocks at the top of Mount Everest formed underwater. Those mountains were pushed up at the later stages of this year-long flood the Bible talks about to form the mountains, the Himalayas, the Rockies. The island of Fiji formed from enormous amounts of lava. In Genesis, it says the fountains of the great deep broke forth. Unimaginable amounts of lava pouring out during the flood, forming the Hawaiian island chains and the Fiji islands and all these volcanic islands. They've all become inhabited since the flood. And they comprehend all this. They get it. And when we had time, Julie Von Vett, who's the co-author of these this second year, or Dr. Baugh, they would spend their time talking about dinosaurs because these kids are fascinated by dinosaurs. Doctor, how many dinosaurs have you dug up?
19 dinosaurs and 2 pterodactyls.
And that's pterodactyls. So 20 different, you know, species of animals that were living during that Earth history period before the flood. Not millions of years ago, before the flood. And he reconstructed the back end, the back two legs of an Apatosaurus. Found the entire huge, I mean, these things are huge. You'll see them in the next little presentation. And we set up those models in front of the kids. And then we talk about dinosaurs, how this is what a typical dinosaur dig looks like. And fossils don't form today. When something dies today, it just, a tree doesn't turn into a fossil. A fish doesn't turn into a fossil. It just gets all recycled. You have to bury something really deep or it's eaten up by predators. You have to cover it really fast or it decays and rots and disappears. There has to be lots of water carrying minerals in and out, and you've got to keep oxygen away. Well, that's what was happening all over the planet during Noah's flood. Walls of water, 1,000 feet, tsunamis sweeping over areas. All of the animals, the trillions of plants and animals are being ripped up, swept around, redeposited, turning into fossil beds, including dinosaurs that would have lived at the time of mankind. Sediment builds up over top of them, and then after the flood, as water's rushing off, and there's lots of rain and lots of erosion, lots of land movement still happening, even after the flood, some of these bones get exposed, and we can dig them up. And what we're finding are dinosaurs that lived before the flood, buried during the flood, fossilized because they were buried deep and fast, and turned into fossils. Well, let's look at the alternative. If you don't want to believe the Bible, if you just leave it out of your thinking, how are you going to explain these trillions of dead animals? Well, the natural thought is, well, there must have been enormous periods of time. Maybe they slowly got buried. Fish dies. Dirt builds up around it. Eventually, enough left with nothing but the bones. Trouble is, that's not what we see happening. A fish dies. The other fish eat it. The crabs eat it. The bones aren't even left. You don't find fossils forming at the bottom of lakes and oceans. Almost never. I don't even know of any examples where you find fossils forming. We would pass around, we'd say, well, scientists have really complicated names for things. And we found lots, like thousands of things called coprolite. And Julie would take some and pass it around. And she'd say, you could sometimes tell a fossil by licking it and see if any of the kids would lick it. And then we'd tell them that's actually dinosaur poo. Yeah. And they would just laugh with it and whoever touched it. But we'd show even skin gets preserved. How in the world over millions of years does something lay there and its skin get preserved? Couldn't happen. We find fossils of fish eating other fish. How does that happen if it laid there for millions of years forming a fossil? It couldn't happen. See, massive, rapid catastrophe. This fish was squashed right in the middle of eating another fish. Here's a fish, Ichthyosaurus, giving birth to a baby. And they found other babies still inside of its little birth canal, getting ready to come out. And it was crushed so fast, it was buried in the very process of giving birth. Laid at the bottom of the ocean while that formed, it could have happened. And we found soft tissue still inside of dinosaurs. And if we have time, we would talk about that. So the flood is real. It's why those rocks exist, not because of these huge periods of time. And fossils give us enormous scientific evidence that the Bible means what it says. The flood is real. So that's a kind of a neat package. All of Earth history, all of geology, all of biology, all of astronomy in about a half hour.
The Jurassic Park, they have the sap.
Yeah, the sap.
And sometimes they say that there's like little local floods, a little catastrophe.
Right, well, yes. That is their answer. And by the way, that's because for almost 50 years, there have been a group of dedicated, willing to be ridiculed, willing to lose their job, creation researchers and scientists that have been pushing and pushing and pushing the evidence that there has to have been catastrophe upon this planet. So geology, really, in the last two decades, has shifted from a century of dogmatic, there's never been catastrophes on this planet, everything is slow and gradual to have the millions of years needed to explain evolution, to, well, there's obvious there have been catastrophes on the Earth. But now they'll say there's just been multiple local catastrophes, and that's what explains the fossils, but there's huge periods of time in between the catastrophes. See, it's a story. It's a story about the past, and if you want to believe it, you'll find a way to believe it. And we're going to get to that at the very end, because that's the next huge key. We would almost always end these presentations by explaining to the kids, you know, the textbooks, the movies, the stuff you're hearing on the internet, it's not because a bunch of people are out to deceive you or they're stupid. They have just been trained to think in a way that leaves the truth out. Therefore, they're going to come to a different conclusion, and it's going to be a wrong conclusion. The only thing more shocking than seeing how conformity affects how you act is that similar forces affect how you think. Now, you think about a professor all their life, you know, they've been taught evolution's a fact, millions of years, billions of years, billions of years, billions of years. And by the way, I kind of did a little study one time. I spent a week and kind of looked how often that came up on TV shows and movies. Then I multiplied it from the time you're like 3 until 21. And I came up with about 10,000 times. You're told that by the time you're 21. 10,000 times it comes up. And then they become a teacher or professor, and they're teaching it to students. And then you put in front of them something that shows it couldn't possibly be true. It is a scientific impossibility. Soft, stretchy, undecayed blood cells and tissues still inside of dinosaur bones. If they were buried during the flood, it's possible. If they're 60 million years old, it isn't possible. What are they going to do? If they admit that those dinosaurs couldn't have been buried that long, they're going to lose their job. They're going to lose their respect to their peers. They're going to have to admit that what they've been teaching students their whole life is wrong. Or they can say, well, we'll figure it out eventually. Which, what are they going to do? This affects all of us. And what we're taught about the past isn't a fact. It's interpreted based on what we've been taught is the framework of the past. And if we leave the Bible out of our thinking, we are guaranteed to misinterpret it. It's all interpretation. Mm-hmm. And the students get that. And the thing is, and I didn't usually have time to go through all these, God warns us over and over and over and over. And you start to look for these in Scripture. Make my word the lamp unto your feet and the light unto your path. And then you'll know the truth. Cast down imaginations and every high thing that exalteth itself against the knowledge of God. Bring every captivity into the obedience of Christ, not the latest scientific theory, because it's all misinterpretation. Beware lest any man spoil you through philosophy and vain deceit. The traditions of men, the rudiments of this world, and not after Christ. And by the way, Christ identifies himself with the Word of God. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and later, and the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. Trust the Lord with all thy heart. Don't lean on your own understanding, because you don't even know where you're wrong. You don't even know where you've been misled. You drag into all your Christianity, all your misconceptions, all the stuff you've been taught, all your misbehavior, and by the grace of God, he'll let you shed it, but you've got to let him, through his word, reveal to you where those things are. And it starts at the very beginning. Where did everything come from? Such deception all around us that's just unbelievably layer after layer after layer that's built up. You know, think upon the things that are true. How often does God deal with truth? He is the way, the truth, and the life. Things that are honest, just, pure, lovely, good, all of which are the opposite of evolution and millions of years of death, disease, and random mistakes leading to humanity. It is an insidious evil that's infected all of Western civilization. It is satanic in its origin and implications.
It's interesting, I'm a school teacher, and when I go to professional development, geography,
mm-hmm.
when the geography professor, the PhD, explaining these
thoughts. The eras of man and all the block movements.
I happened to just raise my hand and say, well, I've heard some other creation scientists say just the opposite.
Do their eyes roll right away?
Worse than that. He said they're not true scientists.
Well, yeah. I'll go on. I've got about 15 minutes left. Science, just in the last probably 50 years to 100 years at most, has been defined as the naturalistic explanation of things. So of the two options, the box made itself, or the box has a box maker, science is by definition defined as only dealing with the possibility the box made itself. So when they say they're not scientists, they believe it with all their heart because they are looking for an explanation outside of natural processes. But it's the truth. They're not looking for truth. They're looking for the latest possible explanation for how it could happen. They're putting their faith into future discoveries when you point out the impossibility of current beliefs. And if you can have a civil conversation, you can eventually get to that point where they'll admit that. Yeah, you're right. I haven't proved it. Yeah, there are problems, but maybe we'll figure it out. Well, then that's faith. You have faith. I have faith. I have faith in the current observations and data and observations of science pointing to the fact there's something behind those, the formation of DNA, the formation of life, the formation of time, matter, and energy. Those have never been refuted. So just stick to the simple. And don't get into the minutiae of, yeah, but there's changes in bacteria and there's bacteria or even steal bits of DNA from other bacteria and transform. Well, they stay bacteria. And they were designed to do that. So there's, okay. Now, let me wrap up. Showed you the video of a year ago. Passed out 30,000 books, 20,000 books. Hit 35 schools. We came back a year later, printed the color book. I want to show you the this time a slide presentation. Oh, this is where I can't see my minimize thing. You have to bear with me while I pull this out. Okay, now I'm going to pull up the presentation of what happened when we came back a year later. So now this is, as you'll see in just a second, this is February of 2018. We went back to two of the high schools, and turn down all the lights for this if you would, two of the high schools that we had visited a year earlier, okay, because it was a new book and we prepared some new presentations, but all the rest of the high schools were completely new. We'd never been there. We brought with us this time, you'll see in a second, I wanted to, my degree is as a research leader, chemical engineer. I'm not a real scientist, okay? Even if I did believe in evolution. You gotta be a PhD and you've gotta deal with the academic subjects versus applied engineering. Dr. Baugh is a dinosaur digger, runs a museum. He wouldn't be considered a real scientist either. So we brought Dr. Jerry Bergman. He's written over 20 books, hundreds of technical papers, has seven earned master's and PhD degrees, all in biology, microbiology, medical fields, renowned, absolutely world-renowned man. But he's a young earth, recent creation Christian believer. So we brought him as one of the people coming into these schools. Now, when we went over this time, first thing that stunned me, I was just blown away. We found out the day we landed, we met with a few, 70, well, all these churches that were part of the denomination that Dr. Baugh was part of starting, gathered for their 40th anniversary in the fall. They all received one of these Pearls of Paradise books. It was explained what we were doing in their education system, how we were coming alongside of them to lead the next generation to Christ. And they wanted to be part of it. And 70 of these church leaders and their wives said, every single day, we are going to pray for this next generation and for what's going on in our public schools until every student in Fiji has one of these books. It's like, what a dedication. So I was just, wow. It's not just us. The whole national church is part of what's going on in this nation. And this is just a few of them. And they're just such beautiful people. By the way, again, this is the great, 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 great grandson. He's considered like royal family would be in England. It's still a kind of an English society. They drive on the wrong side of the road like England. So we met with them, super gracious. While we were there, 100,000 books arrived. Four huge shipping containers filled with all these books. We stacked them everywhere. Actually, they did. They just had crews of young people and pastors and friends and helpers emptied all four of those huge sea containers within a two-day period and stacked them floor to ceiling. Look at the books in their church entryways just to get them out of the rain until we could get them distributed. And it's going to take 3 years. We're committed to go back twice a year for either 2 or 3 weeks at a time and hit high school after high school after high school. And as that's done, a whole, you know, that'll take 3 or 4 years. Another generation will come and it'll continue till all these students know the truth. And then they're going to become the leaders and the politicians and the doctors and the policymakers. Second, a stunning thing. This little group of nobody Christians got to meet with the president of a nation and show him what we are doing in his school system and present him and his wife and his key staff members with a copy of this Pearls in Paradise book. And we thought we'd have 15 minutes. We talked for an hour. Just super, super gracious man, used to be in the military, super excited about getting the books and affecting the thinking of his nation and lining it up with the Bible. This is a typical assembly. Just the students would line up in the hot sun. There are times when they couldn't see the screen and we would just have to do our talks and demonstrations and paint word pictures. They're trying to shield themselves. It was, you know, in the 90s some days, and we were sweating for the Lord. I mean, it's just running off of, at least me, and I'm just swiping as we're teaching. We would be inside at times. This was a boarding school where the leaders of the country would send their kids here. It's like an old English boarding school with beautifully manicured lawns and palm trees. And they had a session on Saturday where the kids would come on Saturday to hear about this.
It's male school.
Yeah.
Everyone is a chiefly individual.
Yes. Son of the chief. Yes, son of a chief. Son of one of the chiefs of one of the parts. They would separate girls on one side and boys on the other, and we'd give our presentations. Here's these dinosaur bones. I mean, they go up like 15 foot up, just two of the bones. And then you'll see later Dr. Boss holding up a model, a little rubber, like 18-inch model of this dinosaur. And he'd explain how its head would be way up above their two-story building. And they were fascinated. So the speakers and teachers, there's my box representing the universe. I'm talking about created, God created here. Dr. Baugh was always one of the speakers. Julie Von Vett, the co-author, and her husband Vince came with us. She's talking about fossil dinosaur skin. And Dr. Jerry Bergman would talk about mutations and how they don't improve things. And Robin came, my wife. Her job was to keep us long-winded speakers on time. So she'd hold up 10-minute sign and we'd ignore it. She'd flip it over to the 5-minute side. And then she'd start waving it and then hold it higher because we had to leave time for the gospel message at the end, the most important part of the presentation. And then every student would be given one of these books. They're so excited, so enthusiastic about getting a book for themselves, especially if they'd hear one of these pages like we, and there's a stack of books. And the national members of the church and the leaders were the ones there giving out the books. And they just line up to get them signed. So happy to be there. And they were signing and anybody could sign the books. They didn't care. So the workers, the leaders, the car drivers, but there they are. Now, third stunning thing that happened. Remember I said we came back a year later, went to some of the previous high schools. At the end of that second presentation, the vice principal came running up to tell us what had happened in his school in that year that had passed since we'd been there the first time. So I want you to listen to this in his words. This is the vice principal of the Dudley High School. There's about 1,050 students.
A year ago, this was brought into our school. Our students fell in love with this book. We went from 43% to 96% in passing English. That's why our science from 44-46% to also 92% this last year. We have been trying to analyze what's the reason behind the great achievement. Was it the teaching? We have been having the same lots of teachers. But we found out that a lot of students are still carrying these books. We achieved a great milestone. Students are so in love with this book, and it's creating change in our school. Thank you.
Now, when he first told me this, he said, those students are reading this book over and over again. That was his words. He was a little nervous as I was filming him. But just so you comprehend this, here's an entire high school. They do end-of-the-year testing. They're in the 40-45% range in English, 40-45% in science. And all of a sudden, at the end of this year, their test scores are in the middle 90s, 92-94%. And not just English comprehension, but science. And they say, what happened? What in the world happened? And they realized, way back at the beginning of the year, they had this assembly where their students heard about creation and science, and they had their own book in English that was easy to understand, visual, and a fun book to read. And not just their English comprehension and not just their salvations, but their science interest went through the roof. The missionary, when he had come to these schools, he would often say, "How many of you believe you came from apes?" And the whole 1,000 students would say, "No!" And when they settled down, he would say, "Well, I know some of you girls think some of those guys might have." And they would laugh. And then he'd say, "How many of you believe in science?" And they'd say, "No!" Just as loudly. Because they equated this, they still believe in God. And they knew there's inherently something not quite right here. And they equated believing in science and going in any sort of science discipline as rejecting any belief in God. And they didn't want to even go there. And all of a sudden, they see there's not a conflict. And it is interesting. And it is relevant. And it doesn't contradict faith. They're just hearing misinterpretations. And it made a huge difference in their thinking. Who'd have thought giving a kid a book in a school could change the scores of an entire school? It's huge, huge. So you have a nation that's permeated by religion. They have an inherent belief in God, but it's all works related. And it lacks this personal relationship with Christ. And you're reconnecting everything for them. And you're giving them a chance to accept what Jesus has done for them, connecting God's word to reality, presenting the gospel in the schools. And look at the interest on the faces of these students.
I'd like to take this time to thank everybody who's been part of supporting this ministry in Fiji, of getting this book,
It'll Catch Up,
Paradise, and teaching creation science in our schools. First of all, it is very rare in the world that we would have a window of time to partner with an education department of a nation to teach creation science in their schools. He says, we come in with our teams. Our team is presenting so well that it's reaffirming what's in these kids' heart, that the Bible is true. And these kids are coming out with a confidence in the Bible that really when they're, the missionaries brought it here 150 years ago, brought salvation to this country. But not only that, you're partnering and helping us really advance the kingdom of God. Because as we now are going out into all the islands, into all the provinces, into all the different little spots in Fiji, it's actually opened a door for us to take gospels, the gospel of Jesus Christ, to the provinces, to the villages, and to everywhere.
Okay, I'm almost done. Just a few more pictures. There's a couple more little quick video clips. Here's the model of that dinosaur and Dr. Boss standing by the bones. Here's Julie holding up the dinosaur poo. This time we let the national pastors and Ben, who is the great great grandson, do the altar call in their language, which I thought was a really good move. And that's the response was the same. As you look at these kids, they are sincere in their desiring what Jesus has done for them. This is the executive secretary to the, you know, the director of education of the entire nation. She is now the point person organizing the schools, the principals, the return trips to the city. One more little testimony.
And he was telling me about the book. And his son came in the afternoon and said to him, in Fijian, he said, "Stop. To translate, he said, "Dad, I'm changing my subject. I'm now going to do science." And that's a good thing. Because the education department is trying so hard to find ways to get Fijian students get interested in science.
Now, just a pause. This is huge. These developing nations want their kids to comprehend English. They want their kids to excel in school and have an interest and an understanding of science. And here we can come in and say, we can do assemblies in your school. We can bring in credible scientists. We can connect science with the reality of God's existence, which is not antagonistic even in a Muslim country. And we were in Muslim schools, Hindu schools, Catholic schools. And then give them resources that points them to back to the God. And each of these books have the gospel message right there laid out in it. Enormous impact of missions. Last comment is by Dr. Baugh. By the way, I just want more of the pictures of the faces of these kids as they're listening to what we're telling them. Okay, wrap-up statement coming up. One more.
I think the climax came yesterday when we spoke at a school, a provincial school. After speaking, after the invitation, the principal stood and he said, we were in cannibalism and the missionaries came and gave us the Christian message. We believed. But recently in our schools, we've been taught evolution. And since it was science, we believed it. Thus, there was no God. He said, we've heard from the horse's mouth scientific evidence that there is the creation of the universe and there is the God of creation. And then they gave us again the gospel message, and Jesus Christ is now our Savior. What more could we ask for?
That was the principal of the school who wrapped it up telling his students that. Isn't that phenomenal? And then here's just images of these kids praying, thousands praying to accept salvation, just fervently asking Jesus to be their Savior, because it's by grace you're saved through faith. And it's not the works that they've been working for salvation and be better people, but it's a gift of God. Not of works, lest any man should boast.